This podcast is brought to you exclusively by the Reality Check Podcast Network.
Welcome to RTW Rewind. Rad Rob will take you on a journey through time to relive some of the greatest moments, matches, and personalities from the sport of professional wrestling. Now, here's your host of the show, Rad Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. I have a very, very special guest today. This man is a legend in the wrestling business whose career was cut a little bit short, but his mark that he left on the business is undeniable. He is the one, the only, the Russian Nightmare, or used to be the Russian Nightmare, Mr. Nikita Koloff. How are you today, sir? Thank you for being here. How are you doing today, my friend?
Hey, yo, comrade. I'm doing wonderful, thank you. I appreciate you having me on. Good to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you here. And, you know, I read a lot of stuff on you over the last couple of weeks, and you literally learned how to speak Russian for your character. Is that correct?
Well, I put a few words together, a few phrases together that I felt would certainly enhance the character and the believability that I was from Mother Russia. Right. Learned to sign my name in Russian, legally change my name. So I went the extra mile, you might say, to try to get the character over.
And that's dedication to your gimmick, brother. You know what I mean? And especially changing your name. Way back in, well, I think it was 1988, around there, when you changed your name?
Mid-80s, yeah. It was not long after I launched into my career, about the mid-80s.
So you were smart. I mean, you had a great mind for the business. You knew that you had to, you know, own your gimmick and own your character, so nobody else could. I mean, that's not a lot of guys were doing that back in the day. You did that before Ultimate Warrior actually did.
Yeah, and I mean, even to the extent, now, I had a good friend, Tim Peltier, who I brought on to kind of oversee and manage things for me. And he was probably the brains behind. I was the brawn. He was the brains. But the other thing he did was trademark my name way back when. And so, you know, there have been some who've used it, unfortunately, without permission, but that's expected.
You know, it's pretty amazing how many stars from the wrestling business came from Minneapolis, you know, from Minnesota. You went to school with a lot of those guys. You went to school with and correct me if I'm wrong, Barry Darso, Rick Rude. Was Kurt Hennig, were you guys around the same age as well?
Yeah, he was a part of that. Actually, you know, part of the story, there was seven of us from that mid-70s period that, in fact, five of us 1 year, because we graduated like three different years, but one year, several of us played on the same high school football team. So Kurt Hennig, man, Rick Rude, Nikita Koloff, Barry Darso, and John Nord the Barbarian.
Ah, that's right. Yep.
All played on the same football team 1 year. And then if you add into the mix, the Z-Man, Tom Zink, and the lesser known would be Brady Boone. We all came out of that same high school. Not college, but the same high school, Robbinsdale High School. Pretty crazy.
That is really crazy. And the fact that you all got into the wrestling business is, I mean, that's almost unheard of. I mean, you know, Minnesota was always a hotbed for wrestling and, you know, amateur wrestling as well. But the fact that you guys that all went to school together ended up in the business, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is. And you know, thinking back, none of us really talked about that back then. I mean, we knew Kurt's dad, you know, was a pro wrestler, you know, Larry the Axe Henning, you know, but we weren't talking about it in the locker rooms or anything or, you know, before or after football practice. You know, we didn't really think much of anything of it at that time anyway. And it wouldn't be till later, you know, into the college years that some of the guys, you know, began to, I guess, entertain that idea and then get involved.
To me, it's still hard to wrap my head around that many people that made it in the business. And then when you went to college, you hooked up with Animal, you know, with Joe Laurinaitis. You guys played on the same football team in college, right?
Yeah, actually, I recruited him. I was part of the recruiting team in college and saw his write-ups in the Minneapolis Star and Tribune newspaper and all his high school accolades. And I literally reached out to him and his family, invited him to the campus, toured them, gave them their personal tour of the campus, and with him and his mom and dad, and really connected. We just hit it off and I guess convinced him to come, and we became really the best of friends at that point through college.
Do you still keep in touch with Joe today?
We do from time to time. We haven't been, I would say, as close over the years as we were for quite a while. But we still, you know, he makes a point of, you know, if we're at an autograph signing, he'll always make a point of coming over and hug my neck and we'll chat. And so we do stay in touch, just not as much as maybe in the past.
Yeah, I understand that. And I mean, we're all the same. I mean, I do the same thing in my daily life. What made you, for my listeners that may not know, because there are some newer fans that may not be familiar with you, and this is a project that I launched that focused just mainly on retro wrestling. So for those people that may not know, what made you want to get into the business, and who trained you when you first started?
You mean to tell me there are fans out there that don't know Nikita Koloff? Hang on here, man.
Can you imagine that? I know. There's a couple, I'm sure.
One or two, I'm sure. Yeah. No, I'm kidding, of course. I tell people all the time, I have people that come and they'll apologize. I was doing some ministry work in Charlotte one time, and this pastor from Baltimore comes up to me, and we're in the green room, and he goes, hey, everyone seems to be, like, super excited that you're here, and I don't have a clue who you are. I'm sorry. And I go, bro, no apology necessary. I realize not everybody on the planet knows who the Russian Nightmare Nikita Koloff is. It's okay. But to answer your questions, so I didn't grow up dreaming of being a wrestler. I mean, football was my passion. It was my love in its time and weightlifting. And so that was my focus all through high school and even all through college, and was on that path to try out, in the professional ranks of football. As I mentioned, some of the guys, Animal and Hawk, Road Warrior Hawk, and Barry Darso and Kurt and Ravishing Rick Rude, a number of these guys got into wrestling. I'm like, hey, that's awesome. That's great. I'm happy for you. And then I got a random call one day. I guess you'd say turnabout's fair play. I got a random call one day from Animal, and he goes, hey, he goes, you know, what do you think about wrestling? I'm like, I think you're doing great. He goes, no, what do you think about? I go, you mean get in the business? He goes, yeah. He goes, this guy Don Kernodle approached me in North Carolina. They're looking for here's what I said. They're looking for a big guy. I guess Don said, hey, do you know any big guys who wouldn't mind shaving their head and becoming Russian? and Adam goes, yeah, I know the guy right now. So he called me up and told me the storyline of a nephew for Ivan. I called the promoter, Jim Crockett. I have a five-minute conversation, sight unseen. You know, there's no taking pictures and sending it through your phone back then, you know.
No kidding, right? Yeah.
Yeah, right. So I literally had a five-minute conversation with him, and I just said, Mr. Crockett, you understand I have no amateur wrestling background, and I've had no professional training. Yep, that's what they told me. I go, you're okay with that? He goes, yep. I go, all right, well, then what's next? He goes, be in my office on this day with your head shaved. I go, that's it? He goes, that's it. I go, okay, I'll see you then.
All right.
And so to answer your question there, I had no training, like zero training. So the day I walked in his office, the day he said to be there, I walked in, had my head shaved. I was 285 pounds, 8% body fat, with 34-inch waist. And I'm thinking he saw dollar signs if I could, you know, if I could chew gum and walk at the same time. And he literally introduced me to Ivan Koloff, Don Kernodle, said, take a look at your new tag team partner. We did all kinds of interviews that day. You know, the story was I didn't speak in English, so that made it easy.
Right.
Stand there, look me with your shirt off. And then the last part of that story is when we finished, he said, be in Raleigh, North Carolina tomorrow night, the Dorton Arena. You're going to wrestle on television. I had never been in a ring.
Wow. I mean, that's
crazy.
I mean, we've heard some stories about that from some guys over the year, but you were literally as green could be. You could not get any greener than never stepping in the ring and being on TV. That's crazy.
You could not. It was, what do they call it? Trial by fire? Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
You could not. They showed me how to lock up, how to tie up in the dressing room.
Wow.
And the instructions were, apparently Crockett said, if he trips on the ropes, he's out of here. So Ivan told me that, and I said, okay. You know, in my mind, I'm like, how hard can that be? Not trip on the ropes. Well,
yeah.
If you've never stepped in a wrestling ring, I'm going to tell you right now, it's harder than you think. So that was my focus. Don't trip on the ropes. Don't trip on. So, you know, 11 seconds later, I went out before a sold-out crowd, and 11 seconds later, I had my first win in professional wrestling, and as the old cliche goes, the rest was history.
RTW Rewind.
When you first had your first match, did anybody smarten you up, or did you still think it was a shoot, or what were your thoughts on the business?
Well, I'll give you a little more backstory. I said, you know, I wasn't a wrestling fan growing up. I didn't really watch it, but the AWA Vern Gagne show came on every weekend. And then in college, actually, a bunch of us muscleheads worked out a little little sweatbox gym in North Minneapolis called Ventura's Gym. And so I had the opportunity to get to know Jesse Ventura, Jesse the Body. And he invited about 25 of us down to the St. Paul Civic Center one time and gave us tickets. And he was doing, of all things, a deadlift match at the wrestling event in the ring against a guy named Paul Ellering.
Okay.
And so there's 18,000 people there who are Paul Ellering fans. There's 25 muscleheads that are Jesse Ventura fans.
Right.
and I'm watching, you know, I'm listening to the announcers, they're loading the bar, and I'm like, that dude doesn't know how to count. You know, I'm trying to do the math on the weight. I'm like, that dude doesn't know how to count. And then I had my aha moment. I was like, or he knows how to count, but he assumes everybody else in the auditorium doesn't know how to count.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my first inkling that, well, maybe professional wrestling's not all it's cracked up to be.
I gotcha. So, I mean, that's smart. Because, you know, there's people that got into the business that were not smarting up until, you know, 5, 10, 15 matches later. And you know, we're legit trying to shoot on people. And you know, once you had a few matches under your belt and you learn how to run the ropes and, you know, were you bumping back then? I mean, or were you squashing people?
Great question. And I just am kind of thinking, you know, when I think about it, you said they didn't smarten people up and trying to shoot on people. For the record, I didn't ever try to shoot on anybody.
Because
I didn't have no amateur background. I wouldn't have known how to shoot if I had even attempted to shoot. So. Yeah. In fact, the guys who did know how to shoot, this is a fun story. Guys like Mike Rotundo, the Steiner brothers, Brad Ringens, Dr. Death Steve Williams. I mean, some of these guys who knew how to shoot, Dory Funk Jr. My conversation with them is, hey, if you start trying to do some of that shooting stuff, those single legs and chicken wings and all that, I'm out of here. I'm here for the entertainment side of this thing. So don't be shooting on me, you know?
Right.
It's a work. But so that said, you know, as I told you, my debut into wrestling, what Ivan and Don and I did for the next 2-3 months is we would get to the towns 2-3 hours early, and Ivan and Don would bump all over the ring for me, teaching me the mechanics of wrestling. So it's like on-the-job training, right? And then Ivan would sit in my corner. They were the world tag team champs, so I would sit in their corner, watch their match. And then on the drive home every night, I would be taught the old school psychology of wrestling, okay? And the storyline that Jim Crockett wanted to build was that I was just mammoth machine from Russia. So every guy was instructed, do not attempt to take Nikita Koloff off his feet. And yes, most of my matches were like 1-2 minute squashes.
So when you actually had to have longer matches and you weren't really used to bumping, how did it feel when you first kind of took those initial bumps? I'm sure it's very jarring on your body when you're not used to it.
Well, and again, I still didn't take many, even transitioning,
really?
Honestly, because because that's what Crockett wanted. And he wanted to build this, you know, undefeatable, machine. And so even with all the other guys, and so a lot of the tag matches, like if I was in there with Ivan and Don or Ivan, you know, Ivan was a little bit smaller, of course, you know, older at that point. So really he was, of the two of us, he was, and or Don, they really did the bumps. Mm-hmm. I was the strong man. Okay. So I still took very few bumps. I will tell you one funny quick story. A guy, good friend of mine, he was years in the business, never made a big, huge name for himself, but he wrestled as himself as Gene Legan, but also he wrestled under the mask, under the hood, as Thunderfoot. Mm-hmm. It was Thunderfoot 1 and 2 back in the days. Well, I was wrestling Gene in Columbia, in those Columbia Township Auditorium in South Carolina, and I'm in the corner, and I told him to give me a Beal out of the corner. He's like, what? I go, give me a Beal out of the corner. And so he's like, okay. So he did it. I took the bump. And when he got back to the dressing room, Jim Crockett, he thought he was going to be fired. He goes, what are you doing? He goes, he told me to do it. I'm sorry. He told me. he thought for sure he was going to get fired. He didn't. But that said, when I eventually started, you know, bumping a little bit here and there, it was a body slam, a drop kick. I mean, I wasn't high flying, you know. I was still pretty much on my feet for really the majority of my matches in those early years.
I mean, that's pretty remarkable. I mean, you were living the dream, getting to be a pro wrestler, and really, I mean, not putting as much wear and tear on your body as, you know, as your comrades, as your cohorts. I mean, that's a pretty good gig, right, brother? It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the guys used to joke about it. Hey, who's going to be the first to get Nikita off his feet? You know, but again, it was part of Jim Crockett's instructions, even to me, and so just following suit. You know, so yeah, pretty good gig. Not as much wear and tear. That's exactly right.
Yeah, you guys were known for having, you know, the best wrestlers in the world, and not being as much as a, not as much show business as the WWF back then. Why don't you think Crockett had greater success? What made him sell to Ted Turner? Any thoughts on what happened there with Jim Cornette and why he never really expanded nationally? Because I'm sure he wanted to at some point.
Well, we did. In one sense, it was kind of the demise or the downfall. And what I mean by that is, you know, Jim Crockett had a very successful family business for 50-something years.
Right.
His dad had started the wrestling company. And as well as other, they had minor league ball, baseball. They had boxing. I mean, they did a lot. The Crockett family was very engaged in the Charlotte, North Carolina community. And essentially what happened is, as we did begin, we went on TBS. We launched on TBS on the Superstation. So we went from a regional company that was, again, very successful over the years. And began to become a nationally syndicated company and go up to Philadelphia and Baltimore and markets where we had never been, St. Louis and New Orleans and all these other places. Mm-hmm. And it grew and it did well. Part of what I believe happened was he was a mom and pop organization and had people in the front office that they were good at running a regional company, yeah. But as the expenses grew and at one point Crockett even bought, He bought two private planes. He bought a Gulfstream. He bought a Falcon. We started flying on private plane, which is great for us.
Right.
But I would say, the way I understand it is, even the CPA who was kind of crunching all the numbers, he wasn't prepared, I'll say it that way, to handle the expansion and the growth of the company. And so, I understand it that it was maybe, they were maybe, 6 months, 9 months, a year in the red before this guy really realized, uh-oh.
Yeah.
And so the sell off to Ted Turner was, we either shut the doors or I find a buyer.
Right.
And of course, Ted Turner always loved professional wrestling. And so, as many know, he became he purchased the company.
And when Turner did purchase the company, what were some of the big changes that you saw between the way things were run with Mr. Crockett and the way they were run with Turner? Because, I mean, Turner was a TV company. They didn't really know much about wrestling. So I'm sure there had to be a lot of differences between the two.
Yeah, for sure. My view of it is it went from mom and pop, family owned, more personable,
mm-hmm.
To a corporate company, a chapter, or you might say a folder in the portfolio of Ted Turner.
Yeah.
Who wasn't hands-on, like obviously the Crockett family's hands-on, right? I mean they're there. Yeah. I mean, Jackie Crockett's working the cameras. David Crockett's on the microphone. Jim Crockett makes an appearance every now and then. To hiring people to run the new company as part of its portfolio who we're not a wrestling family. We're not schooled in wrestling. And so that was a major difference. So it went from mom and pop to corporate America.
Yep.
And from walking into the office on South Boulevard to walking into the Ivory Towers in Atlanta, Georgia. And so a lot of things changed, the perspective of the company changed and the attitude of those running the company. And it was almost like we're trying to have fun. And they're like saying, you need to treat it like a business. Then when we treat it like a business, they go, oh, you guys need to have fun. Like, wait, can you make up your mind?
Right.
Which is it? They wanted all the guys to move to Atlanta. A lot of us weren't interested in moving to Atlanta. I mean, mm-hmm. I traveled there and worked there. I just personally had no interest in living there. So therefore, several of us, myself, Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, the Barbarian, the Garvin brothers, Ronnie and Jimmy Garvin, and Bobby Eaton, a handful of others, stayed here in Charlotte and made for a little bit more commuting and
right.
driving or flying, but. Okay, but so that's what we did.
You know, you had an amazing career. What were some of your favorite guys to work with?
Gosh, I mean, for the most part, I would say I enjoyed just about everybody I worked with. I mean, and it's funny because all the matches I had, to put it in perspective, in 1986, I had 454 matches.
Wow! So you're working double shots and stuff like that.
On the weekends, yeah. And you might have a couple, we're filming Mid-Atlantic television.
Mm, true.
A couple hours of you might have a match on both segments, right?
Yeah.
Or you might have a match on Saturday night and Sunday night for the TBS show,
Yep.
Not to mention double towns on afternoons and evenings on the weekend. So I had a lot of matches and kind of forget about who I worked against. And people, it's great. The fans will post things on Twitter and Instagram, social media. I'll go, oh, my gosh, I forgot I was even in the ring with that guy.
Right, right.
I mean, like, for real, I think about Cactus Jack, Steve Austin, Stone Cold, and Mean Mark Callis. Do you know mm-hmm. who he is?
Yep.
Mean Mark Callis?
Yep, The Undertaker. Yep.
The Undertaker. I mean, I had matches against all these guys. I'm like, oh, my gosh, kind of forgot, right? Dory Funk Jr., Black Jack Mulligan. I mean, for the historians out there, Rufus R. Freight Train Jones.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I had some matches against some pretty legendary guys who were gracious enough to put me over and help build my career. And Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, of course, obviously Nature Boy Ric Flair, the Road Warriors, Sting, Lex Luger, Rick Rude. I had some great matches against Rick Rude.
I mean, literally, all the greatest of all time. I mean, truthfully, you worked with the best wrestlers in the history of the business.
I did. I mean, there's a handful. I mean, looking back, because I always get the question, you might even ask yourself, are there any guys you would have, you know, would have liked to have worked with? I mean, yeah, there's a few. I mean, it would have been fun to, you know, maybe have a match against Hogan. That probably would have been a pretty good payday, pretty good draw.
It would have been huge. Yeah. I mean, if you had the Russian gimmick up there against Hogan, oh, come on, man. You guys would be printing money.
Yeah, I mean, Hogan, I always said I would have loved to have worked against Shawn Michaels and you know, maybe even The Rock.
Yeah.
You know, but, of course, you know, he was just early days breaking in, just opening matches, you know, in the height of my career, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your boy, the coach from the WWE. Now, there are very few wrestling podcasts out there that I like, but this one I love. I love the name. I love the personalities. I love the content. Follow. Subscribe. I do. The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. That's where you're at right here on the Reality Check Podcast Network.
RTW Rewind.
You had the privilege of being not only one of the most hated guys in wrestling all the time, but really when they turned you baby, you were one of the most popular guys in wrestling, and not many guys get to have that kind of a contrast in their career.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was actually doing an interview earlier today, and I was just thinking, you know, we were talking about the switch, you know, from the dark side, if you will, to the light, to seeing the light, right?
Right.
Yeah, because at one point, I actually was literally, you know, by the fans and all that, you know, voted the number one most hated guy in wrestling. Yep. I mean, I had six matches where I had fans jump the barriers and come after me in the ring.
Wow.
One, when you watch the first ever Great American Bash, my first ever shot at Ric Flair, you will see a guy come in the ring. He wasn't part of the show. He was a fan, and then you see the cops come in to get right, like during the match. I mean, right. Talk about right. But I had that happen six times, and then to make the flip, you know, become partners with the American Dream, to throw the tower of power to three to be sour, if you will, yeah, you know, and then climb the ladder, become one of the most. You know, one of the top fan favorites was a unique experience for me. It was wonderful.
Another guy that, you know, probably, you know, would have been one of the biggest guys in the history of wrestling, but had his career cut short, was a guy that you had a pretty good program with. And that's Terry Allen, Magnum TA. You guys worked a pretty remarkable best of seven series where you were tied going into the final match. How was that guy to work with? And, you know, What there's a lot of hype around him. Did he live up to the hype? Do you think he could have been a Hulk Hogan kind of star for Jim Crockett?
They were grooming him to be the next Ric Flair, certainly. And he had the charisma, he had the look, and he had the ability, the skills and ability in the ring to carry it, to carry it off. And probably the number one most talked about with the fans when I'm out doing autograph signings or even speaking in churches and doing ministry work that I do or traveling around the world, the best of seven is probably the number one most event, you know, matches that are brought up by the fans.
Mm-hmm.
Magnum and I had, I feel, some great, I mean, we had similar styles. In other words, we worked very, as I would call it, very snug. Yep. In the business. Because we were both on the same page in that we wanted the believability, we wanted to portray the believability to the fan. And I even had fans that would say, they go, make comments. I hear the stories now. They're like, they would walk out of the arena that night going, I don't know about any of those other matches, but that match between Nikita and Magnum were real. Well, that was real, you know.
Yeah.
But we just had that chemistry, that understanding, and we're okay if a potato or two is thrown, we were okay with that. I think the idea of the best of seven was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Dusty Rhodes creation, like many things, American Bash and War Games and others, was brilliant by Dusty. And Magnum couldn't have been a better guy to do it with. And it's interesting to look back and think, had he not had the accident, how would things have been different, not only for my career as the Russian Nightmare, but certainly his career, you know, as Magnum TA. So, of course, we'll never know, but it's certainly interesting to think. I may never have, because surely with the best of seven, the U.S. title, he gets the world title. We probably would have had 2-3 years run back and forth with him as the world champion, me chasing him, him chasing me, you know, with the title around my waist, et cetera. Of course, we'll never know that, but that would have been interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty unfortunate that happened to him, obviously, and it is kind of fun to think about what ifs and what would have happened. But I mean, everything happens for a reason. Obviously, you know that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And you know, another guy I always like to learn more about is one of your best friends, Lex Luger, who is a born again Christian such as yourself. I heard he wasn't the nicest person back in the day, and but I mean, you always, from what I hear, you always seem to get along pretty well with him.
Well, I joke and I say I was one of the few guys that actually liked him back in those days,
right?
Before he gave his life to Jesus. I mean, like for real though. I mean, like we travel together. Him and I drive around together, and probably some of the funnest times. So sometimes him and I would drive ourselves. You know, him and I would drive to towns. Probably some of the funnest times were when him and I, Road Warrior Animal, and Sting, the four of us, would travel together.
That's a heck of a group.
That's like what, right? That was a heck of a group, and some fun times, and so to look back on it, yeah, I mean, and anyone who maybe knew Lex then would most likely say, probably use a little stiffer language than you used, but
right.
You were being very kind. But and if they were to meet him now and spend any time with him now, there's no question they'd have to say he's a different man. He is not, that is not the Lex Luger I knew. And it's not just, you know, the spinal cord injury and him losing all his size, and it's not that isn't what humbled him. What humbled him, you know, was the day he gave his life to Jesus, and that turned his whole life around. And to now be able to reunite with him outside the ring and tag team with him, you know, we run a camp together called Man Camp here in North Carolina, where we minister to men, and we've done a lot of ministry type things together, and it's just fun. It's fun to be reunited with him outside of the wrestling ring, and certainly fun to talk about stories back in the day, you know, like when I lopped him upside the head with the U.S. belt, you know, those days, you know.
The good times. The good old days.
The good times. That's right. That's right.
And obviously another man, you know, Steve Borden, Sting, you know, gave his life to Christ as well. And, you know, do you ever stay in contact with him nowadays?
Yeah, I do. In fact, for a while there, I was traveling – probably once a quarter. I was a part of a ministry in Fort Worth called Fellowship of the Sword, and Steve was living just an hour south of Fort Worth. I'd fly in there about once a quarter and make sure I stayed over an extra 2 or 3 days, would go down to his ranch and when his boys were younger, and just spend time with them, and just really, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say – you might say discipling or mentoring them, or mm-hmm. or just spending time with them, man, and just, you know, just enjoying each other's company, and did that for several years. And now we continue to stay in touch, not as much presently, but we do still, we'll message back and forth. We'll have conversations. In fact, he's on my radar. He's on my list. I'd intended to actually call him literally today. I just haven't got around to do it because of all these interviews I'm doing, but we'll probably talk this week.
That's cool. Yeah, I've had the pleasure of meeting him once. He did a meet and greet for Big Time Wrestling in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and you know, you want to talk about a classy guy. I you know, one of the nicest guys I've ever met. And it was shortly after his last run in WWE when he got hurt in the ring with Seth Rollins. And, you know, he was sore, you know, but he was thankful to be alive. Because, I mean, spinal injuries, you never know. Could have gone, like with Lex, you never know. Could have gone completely south. But
Could have been a lot worse. That's
but
right.
Steve is such a great guy. He really is. He was fun to talk to.
Yeah, he is. He is. He is. He's a good man, loves the Lord, and you know, really has his head in the right, in the right place, perspective in the right place.
Let's talk about when you got saved. What led you to that decision? Was there any, you know, factors in your life that were going on that made you turn to him? Like, how did you get saved? Is pretty much what I was trying to ask.
Well, no, it's great question. I mean, because, you know, I don't have one of those stories of, you know, coming out of drug addiction or I was an alcoholic or, you know, and anything like that at all. That's not my story. My story is, and I didn't grow up in the church, you know, just like for those who still are, actually, I just had a couple messages on social media the other day from, they watched The Dark Side of Wrestling, the story on the Dark Side of the Ring, the story on the Road Warriors.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And actually didn't realize they were thrilled. Some of them were thrilled to hear a year and a half before Hawk passed. You know, I invited him out to a conference in Arizona, and he gave his life to Jesus. Jensen Franklin was the pastor. And then I brought Mike on the road with me for a year and a half, sharing his story of drug addictions and alcoholism in schools, and then sharing his testimony in churches. And we spent a lot of time together that last year and a half of his life discussing the Bible. And you know, he wasn't like all of us. He wasn't perfect and still had his challenges like we all do. But very, very special time in my life to be able to have that time with Mike, with Road Warrior Hawk. So for myself, you know, I know you opened up by saying a career that was cut short, but the reality is I cut it short.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I walked away under my own terms. Nothing, and an injury didn't end my career. The company didn't end my career. I chose to walk away, and that was part of my plan from the day I broke in. It's unusual the way I broke in. It's unusual the way I departed as well.
Right. I mean, you were on top pretty much, you know, for a long time.
Right. Yeah, and that pretty much my entire career, main event wrestler, other than the first few months of my career. That was a decision I made from the day I got into wrestling. I was going to walk away, but before I was 35, of active wrestling, I'd maybe still be a part of it like I am now with Legends, autograph signings, etc.
Right.
But I was going to walk away. Well, I say that to say I leave wrestling. I'm looking at my future. I'm trying to figure out, okay, you know, what's life hold next for Nikita Koloff? What's in the cards? Because, you know, I've had this wonderful career in wrestling, travel all over the world, got all kinds of experienced all kinds of things I never thought maybe I ever would. And then I met this Christian couple through other businesses I was involved in, and they invited me to church. And again, I didn't grow up in church. I believed in God, but I just didn't know God. Mm-hmm. Believed in him, just didn't know him. I knew of him, I just didn't know him, on a relational level. And so I showed up in October of 1993 at a Sunday service with them, and there was just it was my divine appointment, because there was just that day there was a tugging on my heart, just this inkling that, man, I've been successful, but I'm unfulfilled, something's mm-hmm. still missing in my life. And there was this pull to the altar. I went, got on my knees, gave my life to Jesus, and life's never been the same since. The day of that decision, 17 October 1993.
RTW Rewind.
It's amazing, like, once you get saved. I got saved back in 2009. And I'm like you. I had nothing bad going on. Nothing, you know, my wife was Christian. I'm originally from Connecticut. She's from Tennessee. Yeah. We met online back in 98, so... You know, we dated for many, many years and did a long distance thing and all that. And her parents are strict fundamentalist Baptists, so they weren't excited about her dating somebody from the internet back then. So, you know, you can imagine the conversations that she had with her mom. So,
I bet, yeah.
But yeah, we eventually got married in 2005, and you know, she just kept working on me and working on me and working on me, and just you know, being an example, and you know, being a great example for Christ, and just leading by example. To be quite honest, you know, I just one day just decided, yeah, okay, I'm going to get saved. I said the sinner's prayer, and it's amazing, Nikita. Like the second I did that, it was like taking the blinders off of me. Like I saw the world in a completely different light. It's something I can't ever explain, and I'm sure you know.
Right.
And I'm sure you've probably had people say that to you as well, but I was just living a different life. And until that happened, there were so many things that just clicked. Like a light switch got turned on and everything started to make sense. It's truly remarkable. Now, given I don't live my life the way I should, you know, from time to time, I've kind of shied away, you know. I've never lost the truth. You know, I've never denied God. I've never not believed that he was our savior, but you know, I'm human, obviously. We all go through it. And there's times where, you know, things happen and you know, you shy away from it. But I'm trying to make a more concerted effort towards it. But, you know, it's just like, you know, like I said, it's amazing what happens to you initially when you get saved.
Well, you know, yes. I mean, several things come to mind as you're speaking and sharing some of your story, which is remarkable, by the way. God bless you, man. You must... Hope to meet your incredible bride one day. That's an incredible story.
Yeah.
But it is hard to explain for somebody who's never experienced. And I like to say it this way: there's a difference between exposure and experience. Okay. You and marrying a Christian woman were exposed to the gospel, but until you made that decision to surrender your heart and life, You had, up to that point, had not experienced salvation. You were only exposed to it, right?
Right.
And the plan of salvation. But then once you experienced it, I love what you said. The blinders were taken off. You started seeing life in a whole different way. And I can certainly relate to that part of it for me. One quick story I can think of was Uncle Ivan Koloff, okay?
Yeah.
Once I gave my life to the Lord, I invited him to a revival with an evangelist from South Africa that became a mentor of mine. And Ivan came. And Ivan came and came to the altar that night. Wow. And it doesn't happen this way for everybody, but I can tell you this. For Ivan, because it was a real decision he made from the heart, not just some words he mouthed, but it was a real decision from his heart. Not in his head, but his heart. That night, do you know, he went from being an alcoholic, drug user, abuser, addicted to tobacco, cussed like a sailor. Do you know that night, all of that was gone.
Wow.
Gone. Wiped away. He never put another pinch of chew in his mouth. He never said another cuss word that I know of when I was around him anyway.
Right.
He never had another drink. He never did another drug. He was a changed man. Same deal with Lex Luger. If you knew Lex in the old days, you meet him now. I'm telling you, you're going to say he's a changed man. Only a relationship with Jesus can do that. And that's where you go from the knowledge of to it becoming a personal, you know, from religion to relationship, and that's the difference.
That's exactly right, and that's amazing. You know, with what happened with Ivan and Lex and even Mike Hetstrand. I mean, the fact that you were able to get them to accept Jesus, you know, to help them accept Jesus before they passed away, is the greatest thing you can do in your life. To be quite honest, because I mean, the alternative could have been, you know, obviously, you know.
Much worse.
You know, on the wrong side.
Yeah, the alternative could have been much, much worse for sure. And I like to say it this way: I was privileged to have to extend the invitation. You know, the invitation for Ivan to come to the revival, the invitation for Hawk to come to the athletes conference in Phoenix. Now, they still had to accept the invitation.
Yeah.
They ultimately made the decision for themselves. And I was just privileged to have a small role in that. But I want to say this. You hit on a very valid point. I believe one of the greatest privileges you or I could ever have would be the opportunity to help lead somebody to the foot of the cross, lead somebody to the Lord. and you know, it's God who does the saving, but we get to play a part in that. We get to be partnered with him and have a role in that. That's the greatest honor I feel for myself that I could ever have in helping lead someone to the foot of the cross.
Yeah, I mean, we're just we're the brokers, you know, between yep. the you know your friend and Jesus. And fortunately yep. for me, you know, my best friend was on some hard times and really he knew of God, and his mother was very religious growing up, and he got to a point where he was just outright denying God at one point. But I knew he was going through some really, really tough times. I had known him for 20 something years, and I just happened to catch him and text him one day and ask him how he's doing, and you know, gave him some scriptures. I you know, gave him passages from Job, you know, because he kind of felt like he was going through a lot of the same things. And for whatever yeah. reason, the Lord laid Job on me and had, you know, laid it out for him. And right there yeah. on a text message, you know, he got saved, and I got him a Bible. And for the first time in 20 something years, when I handed him his first Bible, he hugged me and he cried. I mean, there's no wow. better feeling, you know, than that, you know, for sure.
No, there really isn't. Hey, let me say one other thing too. And something you said, I think it's important for people to hear, you know, you said, you know, I've never denied God. I hadn't always, you know, done the best to live for him, but let's make clear for the listeners, you're not perfect. I'm not perfect. And what, spend 5 minutes with me, you know, you'll know that. none of us are. The only perfect one to walk this planet was Jesus. So, you know, the good news is we're all flawed. we all have our shortcomings. You know, we all mess up. And by God's grace and mercy, thankful for his grace and mercy that even when we mess up, even when we even have maybe even draw away and we're not passionately pursuing the heart of God, he loves us anyway, in spite of ourselves. And so we just have to be sure not to be too hard on ourselves and just realize we are human, as you said. We are going to sometimes screw up, but that's okay. God still loves us. And the key is when we recognize we've screwed up, just come before him and just confess and repent and ask for his forgiveness. And by his word, he says he will.
Yep.
That's it.
There's nothing better than that, right? I mean, that's
no.
Now, that doesn't give you a free pass to go out and raise Cain and do whatever you want. And you know what I mean? You still have to try to live a better life. But, you know, as long as people know that he is the truth, he is the way, you're never out of the reach of being redeemed. Does that make sense? There's always room for redemption.
Absolutely. There's always hope. And you bring up another valid point. Don't cheapen grace by thinking, oh, I can do this, that, or the other, and God's going to forgive me. That's not right. what I'm saying. You are correct. You still want to it's a daily walk. So you still want to every day have your gaze set upon Jesus, have your heart as best you can in the right place, and pursuing a closer and more intimate relationship with the Lord. And when you mess up or screw up, because you just might, then you access grace. But you don't cheapen grace by thinking you can go out and do your own thing because, you know, oh, God's going to forgive me anyway. So that's a very valid point. Great point, Jimmy.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. You know, I recently had a daughter. I'm almost 44. She's 20 months. My wife just,
wow. Again,
yeah, my wife wore me down. I never, ever wanted kids. I'm an only child growing up, so I liked my freedom and all that. And, you know, ever since I had her, and just watch her grow up. And it's just amazing to watch her go through some of the things that kids do and learning new things. And I'm just amazed each day at how smart she is. But, you know, she's another reason why I need to walk a better life. Because, you know, I at times, you know, I have a mouth like a sailor. And I know I'm not supposed to. But, you know, there's times we just fall back in those old habits again. And
Yeah,
she's a little recording machine. Like she's a parrot. She will mimic every single thing I do, and she's getting to that age to where she's starting to hear things and she's starting to mimic it. And that's another reason why I have to be an example for her in walking Christ, so that she, when she gets older, she will do the same thing.
Yeah, that's good, my brother. And yeah, there's I'm glad you're having that experience, even at this stage of life that you're in. It's still a great experience. In fact, I've raised four girls, have four girls and eight grandchildren. Just spent all last week with them over in Tennessee, actually.
That's cool.
And you're exactly right. As a father, as a grandfather, my goal, my objective is right. I want to model Jesus for all of them. I want to be consistent in doing that so that, you know, one day they can look back and, you know, my grandchildren will, you know, think of me as a godly man, you know, and that I, you know, that's what I modeled for them. And that's what I tried my best to instill in them is that same thing. So that's great, great on your part.
You know, no matter what I've done, no matter what I continue to do, she will always be my lasting legacy. You know, that's nothing I could ever do would be as important as having her right. And raising a great child. And right. You know, I tell my friends all the time that don't have kids who are around my same age. I say, you truly don't know what it's like until you have one. And it's almost become a cliche, but it's literally the truth. You never, it's almost like being saved. You experience life and see life in a whole different light when you have kids. And man, four girls, that's a lot of hormones running around.
a lot of estrogen was floating around. I was floating in estrogen for many years, my brother. Swimming. I was swimming in estrogen. Yes. A lot of emotions.
God bless you, man. I don't know how you did it, man.
God's grace.
Yeah, right? No
God's
kidding.
Grace.
Yeah. Yeah. That's unbelievable. Well, I could talk to you all day. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I know you're a busy guy, but what do you got going on right now? What do you want to plug, and where can people find you if they want to get a hold of you?
So we'll start with where they can find me. Of course, I do a lot of I am on Facebook. If you find me there, the real me is look for a picture where I'm standing in a river. Look for that picture. You might recognize, if you're an avid wrestling fan, you might recognize someone who's standing there with me. It's the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, and another friend of ours, Jason Sanderson. We're actually standing in the Jordan River in Israel. We were actually baptizing each other in the Jordan River.
Wow, so how cool is that, man?
Yeah, it was an incredible experience.
Wow. Man.
It was an emotional experience. Let's just say that. The same river that Jesus was baptized in. So that's the real me on Facebook. On Twitter and Instagram, Nikita Koloff with the number one behind it. You can follow me there on social media. You can get a hold of me or read a little bit more of my story would be Koloff.org. 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 Just the last name, Koloff.org. If you wanted more information on the camp that Lex and I run, write down mancamp.info. That's mancamp.info. If you want to get more information, if you're a guy 18 years or older and you want to come and hang out with us for a few days, run after the heart of God and be better equipped at, you know, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, then you might consider Mancamp. And last but not least, I'm working on a brand new book. Won't talk much about that right now. The very first book I wrote, Breaking the Chains, I'm looking at bringing back into mainstream circulation. It's still out there, but I'm looking at updating that. And then a book that is very impacting on people called Wrestling with Success. You can find that. You can actually direct message me, and I can personally autograph it for you and send it to you. Wrestling with Success. It's a very motivational book. And then my last book that I'm actually in the process of, in fact, during this lockdown, I've written about, I don't know, three or four new chapters. We're going to add some new pictures, some additional stories. And that's my life story called Nikita, A Tale of the Ring and Redemption. And so that one's out there, and I'm excited about updating that one as well. So yeah, that's just it. I'm traveling the world, man. Once we get back to traveling, I'm traveling the world, preaching in churches and doing conferences and all kinds of fun things and autograph signings whenever we get back to that one day.
Yeah.
So hope to cross paths with all of you out there in the listening audience somewhere, whether it's in an autograph signing, a church service, or at our camp somewhere. So I appreciate you having me on today.
And I appreciate being here, man. Hopefully one day we can cross paths as well, and I could, you know, meet face to face and shake your hand. And I'll definitely check out your books as well. I've read Lex's book. It's a fantastic read. Wrestling with the Devil, I believe it was called. And you know, his life story is pretty remarkable. And I can't thank you enough, you know, for taking time out and spending time with me here and talking a little bit about your career and talking a little bit about Jesus and hopefully, who knows, maybe somebody hearing this will be in a tough spot too and need to see the light, so to speak. So hopefully this has an effect on somebody. That's another reason why I love podcasting, is because you can literally reach people all around the world.
And, yep, absolutely.
You know, not only is it cool for me as a wrestling fan to talk to guys that I, you know, idolize growing up, such as yourself. You know, it's good to talk to a fellow man in Christ as well, because not everyone gets it, so to speak.
Well, I appreciate it. And I'll just say to the listeners out there, you know, if you're a wrestling fan, thank you for being a wrestling fan. You know, I try to remind myself it all the time. I think you guys are the greatest on the planet. You certainly have some of the most loyal fans ever on the planet. So I appreciate your fan support. And I just encourage you, as my brother just said, if you're out there and you know, you go, well, I've never had much to do with that whole world of religion, or can I just encourage you to, either have I, okay, I want to encourage you and say it's really not about religion. It's really about a relationship. And to consider that, consider if you don't have a relationship with Jesus, to consider that and pick up a Bible, maybe read a chapter or two and see if God doesn't move upon your heart. So thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it. God bless you and all the listeners out there.
RTW Rewind.
Unbelievable. I mean, you want to talk about a guy, you know, he's like Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders, you know, retired from football at the height of his career. Nikita did the same thing. That's hard to do. I mean, that is truly something hard. That's so hard to do. And he had a goal, and he knew what he wanted to do, and he saw it through. You got to give the man respect for that. I mean, to leave on top, what better way to leave? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to name names, but obviously there's guys that stuck around well past their prime and maybe shouldn't have stuck around as long as they did. But, man, for a guy that was, like he said, was literally a main event wrestler his entire career, it's remarkable that he was able to walk away when he did and be at peace with it. So, fantastic conversation with Nikita Koloff. I hope you guys enjoyed that. So much more that, you know, I'm sure he'll be on again. We talked off air that we're going to get together and do this again in a few months. There's so much more I want to get into, just, you know, just on the more of the wrestling side. You know, regardless of what you guys believe, I don't ever try to, you know, push religion or politics on anybody. I always want you guys to be informed and to make your own decisions, and whatever you believe, you do believe in. But for me, the Lord compelled me to tell my story to Nikita. And, you know, I'm glad that I did. It was a very, very cool conversation, and looking forward to meeting him in the future face to face and shake his hand, because he is absolutely a remarkable human being. And such a great guy. So I can't thank Nikita enough for coming on the show. And I hope you guys enjoyed this. And again, like I said to him, you know, whoever is out there that may be having a hard time, look, you guys have heard me on this show. I can cuss with the best of them. You know what I mean? And that's me. That's my cross to bear. That's my burden I have to work with and I have to work through. But if there's somebody out there listening to this right now that was on the fence, or, you know, if you're having a tough time and you want to learn the truth and you want to give your life over to Christ, now is the time. There's no better time than now. You know, you could even Google the sinner's prayer and say it in your heart. So hopefully those are you that are out there that needed to hear something like this at the right time. And And hopefully you make the same decision. So if you guys want to follow me on Twitter, it is at RadRobGaming. You can check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadTurtlesWrestling. I stream every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central and every Sunday afternoon at 2 in the afternoon. And I also have a YouTube gaming channel called RadRobGaming. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, it is at RadTurtlesPOD. Send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. Facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. Please leave us a like on there. And if you want, please check out our company website for the Reality Check Podcast Network, of which this show is under. And we're also a proud partner with the Publisher's Desk. But check out rcpodnetwork.com for all of our shows that are up there. And you can learn a little bit more about all of us. And we appreciate it when you support us. So check out rcpodnetwork.com and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You would not believe how far that really goes as and to help all of our shows move up the charts and get more eyes and more ears on the product. A 5-star review is the coolest thing you could actually do for us. So we would appreciate it if you did that as well. I will be back here on Thursday for another edition of RTW Rewind, talking about my favorite wrestler of all time. Until then, guys, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Nikita Koloff. And I thank you for listening, and I thank you for all your support. We'll see you right back here on Thursday for another edition of RTW Rewind. Take care, guys.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can follow RTW on Twitter at RadTurtlesPod, and you can email the show at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We appreciate all of your support. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, only here on the Reality Check Podcast Network.